This video is brought to you by Skillshare. Skillshare is an online learning community for creative people where millions get to explore together. Skillshare has got thousands of classes. As artists, you're going to love discovering topics in fine art, illustration, and more. Lots of Skillshare classes are under 60 minutes. With short lessons, you can fit them into the busiest of schedules. I thought at first I was going to watch a Skillshare class about marketing, but actually, I ended up watching Storytelling for Leaders, How to Craft Stories That Matter with Keith Yamashita. Got me thinking that I could learn all the marketing skills that I wanted, but that actually, the heart of marketing is being able to tell a good story. Skillshare is also super affordable, and annual subscription is less than $10 a month. The first 500 of our subscribers to click this link, which is also in the video description below, will get a 2-month free trial of premium membership so you can explore your creativity.
Hello, I'm Professor Lou. Welcome to our live stream. I'm joined today by Art Prof teaching artist Deep D Menon and also Alex Rowe. Today, we are doing a crit clash, and Alex and Deep D are going to be debating Jackson Pollock's abstract paintings. If you would like to grow as an artist and you can't afford an art class, we've got everything you need here at Art Prof: critiques, tutorials, and professional development. Here's how Crit Clash works. We assign a point of view to each person. Today, Deep D is going to be arguing for Jackson Pollock, and Alex is going to be arguing against Jackson Pollock. Now, what they argue in this debate, it may not be what they actually believe in real life. However, you are welcome to join us in the Discord afterwards, and that is where Deep D and Alex will be revealing their true life opinions of Jackson Pollock. Before we get started, I do want to give you guys a little bit of history on Jackson Pollock in case you're not familiar with his work, but he's primarily known for these monumental paintings, and really the phrase that characterizes his style, it was called action painting. And so what he did in his process, it really was a process where he painted with his whole body. So he would stand over the canvas. He was very active. It was not your stereotypical artist painting on an easel type of process. And his work has sold for millions at auction. And they actually did make this movie about him with Ed Harris in it. Deep D, did you see this movie?
I did not, but when I saw this poster in our slides, I thought that that was him. But what good casting.
Alex, did you see this movie?
I did not, but the same. It was like, wow, Ed Harris was born to play that role.
So tell us in the chat if you guys got to see Ed Harris as Pollock. But a couple other things about his life is that he really was a guiding figure in the abstract expressionist movement in America. And he led a very difficult life where he struggled with alcoholism, and he actually died at the age of 44 in a car accident. I was thinking today, I'm like, I'm 44. That's insane if my whole artistic career was done by now. So he was not around for very long. And he also was married to Lee Krasner, who was also an abstract artist, but obviously she gets overshadowed quite a bit by his career. And another thing to know about him as well is he did have this relationship with Peggy Guggenheim, who was a gallery director. I mean, this is like Guggenheim Museum, Guggenheim. So this is pretty much top tier of the art world. And Peggy Guggenheim was instrumental in terms of getting his career up and going. Let's dig into the Crit Clash and tell us in the chat if you like him or not, or what your opinion is. Alex, what's your opening statement against Jackson Pollock?
The guys from Car Talk, the old NPR show, had a phrase that I'll borrow for it, which is just bogus. I think that it's just there. It's the method is interesting, but the end product is not worth the hype or the attention that it's received.
Interesting. I can understand that sentiment today, but I do think that when he was making this work, it was quite interesting and new. And I don't feel like it was just there. I think that it made people feel things, and it was done at such a scale and was so interesting. And I mean, I think, Clara, the slides that you're showing are really interesting because he wasn't just a drip artist, which is what he's known for. He was truly a well-rounded artist that explored a lot of different mediums and created, I think, across the board, moving work that was interesting to people, especially during that time.
Well, Alex, what do you say to that? Because he is mostly well known for his drip paintings, but we're seeing earlier work here that I think actually a lot of people would not recognize as a Jackson Pollock piece. So what do you say to that?
Yeah, I think that his work definitely has that artistic development early on into what his signature style was. But I think once he entered the field of abstract impressionism, I think that the push by critics and by certain influential art figures like Guggenheim led him to be the poster boy, maybe unfairly, because he had the image, he had the look, he had the exotic kind of craft in his work. It was like, oh, it's new. We've never seen this before. And I think that overshadowed, in my opinion, more talented artists in the era, like Rothko, for one, who received more fame than Pollock received.
I guess fame is one thing, but I will say that I think his work speaks for itself. And it, I mean, it's not his fault that people really enjoyed his work and wanted to give him this marketing and platform. But I don't think that should take points away from his work. He didn't create it being like, oh, people are going to like, you know, I don't think that there was any like ill intent. I feel like he truly, truly, really loved this process he was doing and was really motivated by it. And how it was shown or the marketing that he got is a result of this passion and his interest in him diving into something that was new and interesting.
We have a bunch of comments in the chat. Dara says, I appreciate his process. And Elizabeth is saying his process won me over. So let's talk about that process, because there's so many photos documenting how he actually did this action painting. And you guys can see it's not on an easel. The painting is gigantic. He's running around. I mean, it's a really physically exhausting experience from what I've seen. So what's your take on that, Alex?
Honestly, all positive. I read an account of one of the photographers who went to take some photos and film him painting. And he said it was just surreal to watch it. And if you watch the videos and see the images, it's incredible. And I think my takeaway on that is that Pollock got his medium slightly wrong, that I love his process and I find a lot of inspiration in the process itself, but the end product, I think, is not as powerful to me as that process. And I think that a lot of Pollock is selling the process, not the final product.
I agree with you. I think that the process is magnificent, and especially in the scale that he's working at, it's incredible. I agree with everything that you're saying. But I also think that one of the most amazing things about his paintings, especially his drip paintings, which I think a lot of people associate him with, is that you can see undeniably the energy and the process that it took when you look at this. I mean, the pieces are massive, and the just one of the points that I think of why his work is so incredible is when you look at it, there's no doubt of the exertion and the amount of energy and the amount of commitment it takes to make something of that size and of that rigor. And I think that, yes, it would be amazing to see his process as part of his final product, but also it was documented and it was there to see. And I think that his final product, although they aren't photographs or videos of his process, do speak to that process quite intensely.
We have a comment here from Moses who says it was a bit of performance art. So Alex, are you basically saying that he picked the wrong medium and that it shouldn't have been the paintings that he pushed?
Essentially, I think that the beauty in the process was what people in the art world, critics, were fascinated by. And that what kind of elevated him to that poster boy status. And the paintings don't really measure up. I think that there was this push for him to be labeled as a groundbreaking artist. And I think that now we're seeing the side effect of that, where it's almost a fear to actually say, like, nah, I think he was just all right and was kind of pushed. In a weird way, he became a very symbol of the artistic establishment and trying to be against it.
We have a comment from Shame, who says, his process reminds me of a child in the sense of lack of stiffness. Now, the flip side of that, I'm sure some of you guys have heard this phrase before. People go to museums and they point to abstract art and they say, my kid could do that. So what do you say to people who say that about a Jackson Pollock painting, Deep Dee?
I think that's everyone's gut reaction with abstract work, like you said, Clara, and especially Jackson Pollock's work. I think that maybe your kid could have done something similar, but I don't think that your kid could have done that. Because again, I don't know if anyone's tried to do a drip painting of these sizes, but it is exhausting. And there is a lot of thought put into his color choices, his composition. I mean, it is abstract and it doesn't make sense. And it's not as clear as a Renaissance painting might be, but there is a lot of thought put into it. And I will bring up, if you've done any extensive research on Jackson Pollock's work, he actually works with fractals in a really, really interesting way. And I don't know if you know what fractals are, so I'll give you a quick definition that I have on my computer. But it's that each fractal is composed of a single geometric pattern repeated thousands of times at different magnifications. So kind of like a Russian doll nested within one another. When you zoom into his paintings, you see the same patterns repeated, repeated, repeated. And when you zoom out and you see this happen in nature a lot of times, like with the veins in leaves and with rivers, you know, rivers stemming off of each other, or neurons in our brain. And when we look at the galaxy, and it's a really difficult thing to recreate. Yet one of the ways that people can determine if a Pollock painting is a Pollock painting is by seeing if this fractal theory exists in his pieces, because people will try and replicate it, but actually they can't replicate it because it doesn't have the same fractal theory. So I don't actually know if he was specifically trying to do that. I haven't found any research, but so many scientists and physicists have looked at his work and found this to be a common thread in all his drip paintings. And I think that's so fascinating. And it clearly shows a level of thought and process in his pieces that are a notch above people who are just splattering paint on a canvas and saying, bada bing, bada boom, I'm done.
I don't know. I feel like that's maybe exactly what it is. Just a little bit of bada bing, bada boom, he's done. And I think the fractals is interesting, but the funny thing about it is when paintings that were not done by Pollock are identified as not his because they lacked that fractal nature, that seems to me like it's the forger coming through on that, because fractals are naturally found within nature. So almost if you tap into that pure, raw, just unfiltered flow of the paint, which is impressive in a certain way, then the fractal would be the end result. Like, fractals emerge if you let water dry on a table. So I think the presence of them isn't so much a show of his intent, more so him letting himself go to the laws of nature and gravity. And essentially, as abstract and interesting as they might be, it's almost the same as just a still life, just representing nature.
But isn't it fascinating to think of an artist being able to relinquish control and allow themselves to, you know, lend themselves to the laws of nature? Because I can't do that. Can you? Like, if you ask me to create something with that much freedom and tap into my primitive natural self, I would say, okay, but I wouldn't be able to do it. And so that's kind of fascinating in and of itself, that he's able to create these things that occur so naturally in nature, but it's really hard for us humans to do it. I think that's super cool.
The art girl is saying, Pollock was also the first to do it, the drip paintings. If someone did a drip painting now, no one would pay attention to them. So let's talk about the historical context, because Jackson Pollock was working in the 1950s and abstract art was not really a thing back before that time period. And abstract expressionism completely took over the art world. It was a huge seismic shift, and just nothing was the same after abstract expressionism happened. So, Alex, what do you say about Pollock's role in art history?
I think in that sense, yeah, it's hard for me to not look at him and see him as less than some of the other artists in the abstract expressionist movement. We already mentioned some at the beginning of this slide. Rothko, for me, is my personal favorite of them, where, yeah, I think abstract expressionism as a whole has that limit for newer viewers to it. When I first saw Rothko, I saw him in a textbook, and I was like, that's nothing. It's just a big red canvas. And then I saw it in person, and I was absolutely blown away. And for Pollock, the same thing kind of happened, where I first saw him in a book, and I was like, yeah, that's just spatter of paint. And then I saw it in person, and I was like, oh, that's pretty big. He must have gotten pretty tired when he did that. But it didn't hit me in the same way that Rothko did.
But I will say that it still hit you, Alex, did it not?
Like, but that's because the frame fell down and the museum's in a lot of trouble for that. But
you're a millionaire now. No, but I do think it goes to, like, in a book or on Google Images, his drip paintings might not seem, or any of his work might not seem so magnificent. But when you see it in person, you really, like, the process and the energy and the exploration, I think, is so important in appreciating his work. And I think when you see it in person, it's a completely different experience. And I mean, Clara, what you were asking about the fact that at his time when he was alive, this was something new, and maybe now it's cliche. I think that happens across the board with any artist who was revolutionary in their time or trying something new. I mean, it's like my grandma has dishes that she makes that when she thought of adding this one ingredient, it was the coolest thing ever. But now that I do it, everyone's like, whatever. You know, time makes things cliches. People, it's cliche because people loved it and they wanted to do it themselves. And that in and of itself says that it was of importance and it made people think and it spoke to people.
We have a comment from Slepnir who says, Pollock started off something realistic initially and then built it up with his inner interpretation. So that brings up this idea of artistic growth, because we have seen throughout these slides that not all his work was drip paintings. He did a lot of prints and images that were very different. What does this say about artistic growth, Alex? If there is, I mean, it's your opinion.
Yeah, in my opinion on it, again, it points to he was forced because of his photogenic nature to be the poster child for it and was kind of pigeonholed into just this one idea. And I think he discovered what made Pollock Pollock, and then he kept doing it and doing it and doing it. And he didn't really explore beyond that once he hit what sold.
I mean, if I found something that everyone was stoked on and I was really enjoying doing, I would also keep doing it. Like, you can't hate the guy for, like, flexing that art muscle. But I actually, like, I sometimes try and think of these big artists. I was like, if Pollock came into our Discord and posted some of his earlier work and then his drip paintings, I would genuinely have a wow reaction. And I would be like, this is awesome. You are exploring so much. And everything you do has the same kind of commitment and energy, and you're unafraid. And then if he landed on drip paintings and was like, this is the thing I want to do, and everyone in the Discord is like hyping him up, would I be mad about it? No, I would be like, you are really like taking on something head on and loving it. And I'm here for it. And it's clearly resonating with people. And I think that there is some genius behind it. So join our Discord.
Well, let's also talk about the physical scale of his pieces, because there's obviously lots of different types of works that he's done. But if I go back to one of these slides, if you guys have ever seen his work in person, some of it's huge. I mean, some of the paintings are like, what, 15 feet wide? They're 3 times taller than the average person. And by the way, tell us in the chat, who here has seen a Pollock in real life? And whether that changed your perception of Pollock's work. So maybe Alex and Deepti, you guys can both comment on that. So Alex, have you seen a Pollock piece in real life? And what was that experience like, if you've had it?
Yeah, saw it in, we went to the MoMA back when I was in school. And yeah, it covered a whole wall. It was massive. And it was in a way where, like, yeah, to give it the credit, the photos don't really do it justice, but it still was not as gripping as I think the hype makes it out to be. It was not as impactful or as moving.
I have seen a Pollock in person and it was massive. And I think that seeing it in person just gives it a whole different narrative. I mean, I felt so small against the whole thing, and it lives as so many different pieces, almost like a Rothko, where like you see it as a wide single piece, but then you can go up to it and really spend time in these smaller moments all throughout the canvas. And just like he was so physical in creating those pieces, I feel like as you are interacting with it, it's a physical chore, you know, navigating against the other people that are looking at it. You're moving across the canvas and you're having to use your whole body to engage with it at an intimate level. And I think that's incredible too, as an audience member. He's really playing with scale, texture, and surface. So it's not just about his process in the drip painting. It's really about how we interact with the piece too.
Well, we have a bunch of people that have lots of opinions about seeing a Pollock in real life. Ashley says, I've seen it in real life. I think if a piece is going to be that large, it should have some sort of meaning. Jackson Pollock's works just take up space in the museum. Just my opinion, though. And other people are saying, like Mayela says, it is amazing seeing it in person. And we have a lot of questions about size. Tom says, sounds like size does matter. And we also have Sonnet, who says, yes, I have. I was fascinated. It was great. So we've got size. But what about imagery? This is not imagery that you can say, oh, that's a bunny hanging out with a horse. There's nothing recognizable in this. I mean, sure, you could play the cloud game and say, oh, I see a Chinese dragon in the upper left-hand corner. But I think we know that it's an abstract image, doesn't refer to anything specific. What do you say about that, Alex?
I think that's funny. Where first I have to, yeah, exactly. It is an abstract image, an abstract expressionism. I think the most beautiful thing about it to me is that abstract expressionism, rather than conveying a narrative of a story, I think it conveys just a pure, raw emotion to you. Like when I see some of Rothko's in person, it's just this flood, depending on the colors he uses, and it's surreal. It's incredible to experience. But I feel like with Pollock, that record needle gets stopped just on the word chaos. So every single one is just, ooh, isn't this fun and exciting? Oh, look at this one. You don't know where it's going. And the same emotion goes through every one. So for me, it's not the change in the palette or the change in the size or the change in the style of his forms. It's just that the same emotion goes through.
I do agree that there is a lot of chaos in his work. But for example, when I look like at this one, it feels like a completely different form of chaos. It feels like an attempt to control chaos and an attempt to find a grid, or it feels a lot more streamlined and controlled than some of his other work, like the next slide, for example. So sure that there is a lot of chaos in his work, but I do think that you can make a whole life on chaos. But there are different facets to chaos and layers to it. And I think Pollock is tapping into all of that and different ways of engaging with chaos and energy and physicality and using your whole body. And I don't think that you see it again and again and again in the same exact way. And I don't think it's wrong to focus on something like chaos or energy or pain, but those are all things that I see in his work.
Well, Adrian's bringing up a really good point. They are saying, I've never seen one, but it's weird how I can't identify one from another. These pieces don't have anything that distinguish them from one another to me. Well, do you agree with that, Alex?
I actually don't agree with that. I think that within his paintings, they all have the sense of difference, and they all show his own personal exploration within them. But I think it's such a limited and narrow scope.
I don't agree with this at all. Like, I think that his pieces, I feel like his pieces as a Pollock have a very unique energy and look to them. And then I do, honestly, when I do look at all of his pieces, I feel that there is a common thread between all of them, but they do feel vastly different to me. And they do feel very, very specific to a moment in his life or a feeling or a color palette or an energy. So sure, maybe when you see it on paper next to each other and you're not spending that much time digesting them, they might look similar, but that's the point of art, you know, is to spend time with it sometimes, and to, especially with abstract art, it's not going to hit you over the head like something else that you're more used to might. So I would disagree with that.
We have a comment from Traha Pace, who says, do we really find Pollock a genius because he is, or because everyone says he's a genius and we go along with it? I mean, this sort of brings up the marketing part of being an artist, is a lot of this is he was a pretty dramatic personality and he was hanging out with Peggy Guggenheim and his work sells for millions of dollars at auction. So what do you say to that, Alex?
I think that's essentially the crux of my whole point, is that I'm not saying he's not without his skill. I'm not saying it's not without its importance it brings to the artistic table, but I do think the majority of the hype and the majority of the praise for his work comes from that long game of telephone of, oh, did you pay the artist Peggy Guggenheim's really into? Oh yeah, oh, I've heard it's, oh, and then all of a sudden it became a household name.
But I mean, that is so common and inevitable when you get to a certain point of recognition. And I think that like others may think of you as a genius, but at the end of the day, we're talking about your work. And I don't think we're debating right now, is Pollock a genius? We're just debating his work. And I think that, of course, a lot of times people, like there are musicians today that I can think of, artists that I can think of, that clout and nepotism and he said, she said is so much of like, oh, they're a genius. And you have to come up with that opinion on your own. But I think that regardless of if he's a genius or if he's an artist or whatever it is, his work is clearly very polarizing and it's clearly affecting people and it's clearly making people talk. You don't just get called a genius regardless of people are jumping on that train or not if people aren't talking about your work and you aren't getting to a certain level of recognition. And I think he's undoubtedly doing that.
Well, there's actually a saying in the art world, as long as they're talking about you, which basically says that you do have to stir up some drama in some way for people to remember that you exist. So it's interesting how a lot of people would rather have a terrible review of your show in New York City than no review at all. So that is definitely a part of being in the art world. Emily says, Pollock also said he wanted to create a visual representation of his, quote, inside world, which I think makes his paintings really honest. He puts so much of himself into them, both mentally and physically. What do you think about that, Alex?
That's a very good point, is my first instinct. No, I think that that's a very good thing for his own personal journey and his own personal interaction with art, which is awesome and something that I think I agree with, and I don't want to discredit that. However, I don't think that that shows art that is necessarily impactful or necessarily important.
I love the fact that I truly do feel like his work feels really, really honest. And I think going back to the whole like poster boy of abstract art and the whole genius thing, like I feel like one of the reasons that stuff doesn't really affect my thoughts on his work and who he is because his work at the end of the day to me still does feel really honest of whatever he's going through or he's feeling, and it feels so personal to him. And I think that's really important when you're thinking about art. Like your public image is one thing, but does your work still feel honest and pure at the end of the day? And I do think for him, it really does for me. It really feels like something that this guy genuinely made out of a pure, honest feeling. And that's why I think that it's great.
People have so many opinions about Pollock. Maria Kilson is saying, I think that not everyone feels connected to his pieces, don't even like it, but pretend to like it more because they don't want to disagree with the art market. And Sleipnir is adding, being on Life magazine did not hurt either. I mean, back then, being in Life magazine was a big deal. That was such a major press moment for him, and he was really well known for that reason, although Blue Wool Spirit is saying overrated philanderer. Lisa H wants to know, where are his thumbnails? And UWU says Deefdy is winning this print lot. We'll just have to see about that. And Maria says, is it just me or Alex looks like someone who is really bad at criticizing? Yikes. Wow. You guys are sassy today. I want to call to attention this comment from Ashley, who says, but we can't separate the art from the artist. All the unnecessary hype around Jackson Pollock's persona and celebrity connections takes away from the art, which is already kind of lackluster. Well, Alex, do you separate him or not from the art?
Pollock's, I think that universally, I always try to separate with an asterisk the artist from their art. I think that's something I'm trying to do in the future as well. And I think with Pollock that the reason I say asterisk is because you can't deny that someone's life and their journey inspires the work that they create. But yeah, I think that with Pollock, I find it easier to separate the art from the artist. And I'm trying to pinpoint why. I think it's because of what I was saying earlier, where it doesn't seem to have that much broad exploration in it. It kind of seems like a way he found to express this point of himself and then kind of stopped there.
I actually think that in a lot of cases, it's hard to separate the art from the artist. But I do feel in Pollock's case, when it comes to this whole like celebrity aspect of things, I don't know too much about his personal life. I feel like my interaction with his work has truly been just his work and watching his process. But he didn't, at least in my opinion, seem like someone who was trying to get in front of the limelight, but was more so like adjacent to it and thus was thrust into it. But then again, it's like Warhol was too. There's a lot of famous artists who are very much celebrities as much as they are artists and that exist today. And I don't know, I think it's hard to separate the art from the artist, and I don't think it's right to do that a lot of times. But in the case of his celebrity status, I think that his work feels honest and emotional to me. And so his celebrity status doesn't bother me that much.
And by the way, if you guys want more on that topic, we do have a video that asks, do we separate the art from the artist? And we give a couple examples. That is in the art ethics playlist on our YouTube channel. So what we're gonna do now, you guys are gonna tell us in the chat who won this crit clash, because Deepdy's getting a little sweaty before the stream and wants to keep her tally in check. Although, Alex, I will say, Sonnet is saying, I think Deepdy's winning this crit clash. I don't believe Alex doesn't love Pollock. And we had another sassy comment from Neil, who says, Alex is too gentle, but he was still able to crush Professor Lou in the Giger crit clash. I know, I got really mowed over in that one. So yeah, Deepdy, I don't know what you're worried about. So while you guys are telling us who you think won this crit clash, we're going to do an art prof share, which is basically where you guys create artwork in reaction to a video that we have, and we get to show what people are making in our community. So this is actually a page of notes and sketches by Gila Nyes. I'm really sorry if I mispronounced her name, but Gila was watching one of our anatomy videos. And so they ended up sketching out some head gesture drawings. It was a stream that was about hair, where we talked about how to draw hair. And they talk about writing down things to remember. The 30 to 60 second sketches turned out really well, and maybe better than the old ones, and that they had a lot of fun watching the video. Now, this is different because this is not like a full out artwork like we sometimes see for Art Prof Share, but I think this is important in a different way. What do you think, Alex?
I think this is a beautiful example of the non-glamorous side of developing as an artist. It's easy to look at your artistic development as breakthrough piece after breakthrough piece, when in between is page after page of notes and sketching and exploration that it takes to improve in your craft.
Deepdy, what do you think?
I mean, I'm so impressed by your dedication to your learning process. Like, I don't even take these type of notes when I'm in school. You know, like this is awesome. I love how you're sketching, you're writing. And just like Alex said, this is such a crucial part of growing as an artist and your development. And it's not as glamorous, but I am so glad that you're doing this. And I can guarantee that this is going to further your artistic career and make you a stronger artist. So go you. This is awesome. Keep it up.
I mean, this is the stuff that really is the beginning of an artwork. Like, you don't get to the artwork without thinking through these concepts. I love how the drawings are really simple. They look at shape, they look at volume and form. It's not about individual hairs. So really nice work, really investing time into your study. So this is the stream. If you guys want to check out how to draw hair, you guys can take a look at that. It's on our Anatomy for Artists playlist. And let's see what is going on in the chat. Who thinks what is going on? Oh man, Deep D. Deep D for sure. Deep D's ready. Oh, Alex. Deep D hands on. Sorry, Alex. Deep D won to me, although Alex had a vigorous counter.
Okay.
You got vigorous one fan.
Hey!
Says, Alex won. Pollock was not the best abstract expressionist. Soy Tainley says, I think Alex made good points, but I think his side is hard to defend. Look at this, Deep D. Deep D. Oh, Deep D, who was so worried about losing this great class?
You guys, I was literally sweating before the stream started. I was like, there's no way the odds are completely in Alex's favor.
I think the one Emily that hit says, artist.
Alex had some really well thought out points, but Deep D wins it for me. Ashley says, Alex, but just because I don't like Jackson Pollock. Sorry, Alex, but I do appreciate his well-balanced, nice opinions. Look at this. Blue Wolf Spirit says, Alex is so nice. I want to hug him, but Deep D still won, even though I don't like Pollock. You guys have so many conflicting emotions about our staff and Jackson Pollock.
Those are the ones that really hit hard, the ones that said, I still don't like Pollock, but Deep D still wins. That's, oh.
Alex, you're and a comment
from Evans. Pollock's talent is clear from controversy his work inspires. If everyone agreed, it would mean it isn't art. Yet he was capable of so much more. Becoming art world darling stopped his progress. I mean, we could be here all night talking about Pollock. There's just so much to talk about. Art Prof has a podcast. It's available on Spotify and also on iTunes. And if you guys would like to know what Deep D and Alex really think about Jackson Pollock in real life, you're going to want to hang out with us in the Art Prof Discord. We're going to be over there in the Crit Clash Reveals channel in about a few minutes. If you're not in the Discord, you should join because it's awesome. The invite link is in the video description below. And subscribe to our channel and join the Art Prof family. And we want to give a big shout out to our top Patreon supporters who make it possible for us to keep Art Prof up and running and accessible to everybody for free. Everybody, thank you for your comments, for your discussion, for contributing all your opinions. Thank you so much for watching. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.